Chapter 28 Family Ties. Needle pain pierced the blackness. A soft light illuminated the interior of Justinian's helmet. A chime sounded. The glow came from a thumbnail backup helm plate. All Justinian could see was a blur through the mucronoid crusting gumming up his eyes. He blinked it away. The display was cracked. Luminous liquids trickled from the glass. Where the screen still worked, sigils announced a miserable tally of damage and injury. His armor had been running for days on minimal power consumption. He had gone deep into hibernation. Looking at the wounds, starkly presented to him in beads of light, he was not surprised. If he survived, he would be a while healing. The Belisarian furnace in his chest was working, sending his human-born healing systems into overdrive. The furnace pushed him along a dangerous path. It was keeping him alive, but it raised his temperature dangerously and consumed his body's resources. If he were not rescued soon, it would kill him. How much longer he had remaining before that happened was beyond Justinian's ability to calculate. But he was alive. The pain in his back was a good indicator of that. He tried to move, but all he managed was to shift his head. Metal scraped against his eye lenses. His body was cocooned by mucronoid excretions within his armor, and this hindered his movement further. Data runes blinked in warning. The reactor in his battle plate was running poorly and could not stand the extra power draw of his supplementary muscle fibers. He was weak. He could do nothing but wait. He was terribly thirsty. He called upon his battle plate to provide him with sustenance. None came. After a few moments, his armor sedated him, and he drifted off back into dreamless sleep. When he woke again, he felt stronger, but he still couldn't move, and a gentle beeping in his left ear told him his air supply was close to exhaustion. The grating whine of power sores sounded over his face. It stopped, replaced by the wrenching squeals of metal. More sore noise followed, then the hiss of pneumatic shears and the soft yielding sound of plasteel being cut. Someone was digging down towards him. He wondered who. Did salvation await, or torment? He realized that the last time he had really thought about dying was that day in the Scolum, when the stern-faced recruiters had come for him and changed his life forever. For some reason, that struck him as funny. He was still laughing when the last great weight was pulled off his body. Not until it had gone did he realize how constrained he had been. His suit opened his breathing mask to replenish its stocks of air. He arched his back, and he took in a great, rasping gasp. But he was not free yet. A length of plasteel across his chest held him firmly in place. A slack-mouthed servitor looked down on him, its pasty, grey head framed between a pair of massive lifting claws. It bent down, grippers opening, reaching for him. The thing's idiot brain perceived him as another piece of wreckage to be hoisted away. He had been saved to be crushed.
"Wait! Stop!" said Justinian.
The servitor bent closer.
"Hold!"
commanded a voice. The servitor stood upright and pivoted to one side. Running lights on the unit bolted to its skull blinked an idle sequence. Footsteps rasped over debris. A Nova Marine in the rusty red livery of the Martian priesthood appeared over the hole. A brace of servo skulls hovered behind him, playing scanning beams over the fallen Space Marine.
"I have one here!"
shouted the Tech Marine to someone Justinian could not see.
"Brother Apothecary, your aid, please. This one is alive!"
The Tech Marine addressed him.
"Keep yourself still, brother. Aid is coming."
"If you free me, I can pull myself out," said Justinian.
His voxmeter crackled.
"I want to get out of this hole."
"You Primaris Marines are strong," said the Tech Marine admiringly.
Another scan beam ran up and down Justinian's body.
"You are injured, but not mortally," the Tech Marine said. "I will aid you."
His servo arm unfolded itself from the side of his power plant and moved forward and open. The plasma torch held beneath its grips ignited. The Tech Marine started to cut away the plasteel bar.
"Did we win?"
croaked Justinian.
"We won," said the Tech Marine. Typhus withdrew. Gallatin arrived in orbit in time to turn the battle in the Primarch's favor. The last of the enemy were driven off the station by armies redeployed from the surface.
Duvaro, he swallowed. Did he survive?
The plasma torch cut through the metal. It parted with a crisp ping. More pressure came off Justinian. Finally, he could move his arms.
The chapter master is dead, said the Tech Marine, sadly. What about my warriors? Am I the only survivor?
From this bunker, other Primaris Marines? Delicately, the Tech Marine moved his servo arm over to the other side of the wreckage. The plasma torch burned again.
Two others live. They are in the Apothecarian. They should survive. That is good.
The metal came away. Justinian pulled it from his body. Unpowered, his armor dragged at him, and it took him two attempts to shift the metal. He attempted to rise.
Steady, commanded the Tech Marine. Your armor is non-functional, and you are half-encystered. I will stand, said Justinian. Well, if you insist.
The Tech Marine took a step down into Justinian's temporary tomb and extended his hand, exposing the blue and bone shoulder pad on his red armor. Justinian reached up and grasped the warrior's hand. With care, the Tech Marine pulled Justinian upright. He winced as pain shot through his legs. He leaned against the Tech Marine for support.
Take it slowly, the red-clad brother said. Are you sure you do not wish to sit? I am sure.
Justinian defied the pain to stand unaided. He allowed the Tech Marine to steady him.
Where is Brother Locko? The Tech Marine complained. Locko, get over here before our Primaris brother walks off on his own.
There were servitors everywhere, digging through the wreckage of the Crucius Portis II under the direction of a dozen Tech Marines. An apothecary in white hurried over, wiping down his bloody reductor.
I'm coming. Unlike your charges, mine bleed to death if I go hurrying off to look at something new, said Locko.
There, you are free, and you have aid, said the Tech Marine. You have my thanks, Justinian said to the Tech Marine. He paused. Brother, he added.
Upon Parmenio, there was a silent vigil. Candles were carried through the dark streets of Tyros to the cathedral. The people wept to see the body of the saint upon her bier. Prayers were given. Thanks were lifted by singing voices to the Primarch and the Emperor. In orbit on the Macrag's honour, an atmosphere of a different sort prevailed. In close conclave, Gilliman and his highest officials sat in judgment of Iolanth, he upon his throne, they in chairs of black steel arrayed in a semicircle around him. Iolanth wore a simple dress, not unlike the shift Calia had died in. Her hands and bare feet were manacled, but she held up her head proudly and looked Gilliman unflinchingly in the eye.
"You admit that you disobeyed my orders," said Gilliman, "and that you did so to release from custody the girl Calia of Tyros."
"I do, my lord," said Iolanth, "though only to save you."
"And your warriors murdered my servants in commission of this crime."
"They did so at my order, my lord," said Iolanth.
"Did anyone else encourage you upon this course of action?" said Gilliman.
"No, my lord."
"Do you swear?"
"I do."
"By the Emperor of Mankind?"
"I do, my lord," she said. "I swear by he who sits upon the golden throne."
"Very well."
Gilliman swung his monumental head about to stare at Matthew. His face was set with such stony hostility that Matthew's soul crumpled.
"Lord Arbitrator, please tell this court what the penalty is for treason."
Gilliman continued to glare at the militant apostolic. Gilliman's chief of arbitrations stood from his seat. He was an old man, retired from frontline duties for many years. His hawkish eye looked upon Iolanth without mercy.
"No one who defies the holy will of the Imperial Regent can be permitted to live. For defying you, she should be condemned to death." And for the breaking of her vows under ministorum law?
Death by immolation.
Death by fire?
That is the penalty, my lord, said the chief of arbitrations.
Matthew could feel Gilliman's anger surging under his calm exterior. He was a volcano ready to erupt, but all the Primarch displayed was a tick in his upper lip. Matthew was glad when the Primarch returned his attention to Iolanthe.
Do you repent, Sister Iolanthe?
I have nothing to repent, my lord, said Iolanthe proudly. I will not ask for your forgiveness. I defied you, but I would do it again without a second thought were the moment to come again. And even were that moment to present me many other choices that would save my life, for the sake of my soul and the Emperor's love, and for your sake, my lord, I would take the child to the battle.
So be it, said Gilliman. Pronounce my judgment.
For the crime of breaking the order of the Primarch, death, the chief arbitrator said.
The room was silent.
For the crime of murder, death. For the crime of endangering the person of the Imperial Regent, death. For the crime of unleashing an unsanctioned psyker, death.
Gilliman stood. His presence grew beyond his stature, smothering the breath from Matthew's lungs.
You shall be treated fairly for your prior service, he said.
He motioned to a pair of his Victrix guard.
Take her away. Make her death quick and clean.
The Space Marines led Iolanthe from the room. She looked dead ahead, her head held high. Gilliman stared about.
Clear the room.
The lords and generals of Gilliman's staff got up from their seats, bowed, and departed. Matthew made to leave with the rest.
Not you, militant apostolic, said Gilliman.
I will remain by your command, Imperial Regent, said Matthew.
He went to sit again.
You will stand, priest, said the giant Maldivar Colquhoun.
The tribune had a savage look on his face that made his noble features ugly. Alone in the room, he was armoured, and he pointed a golden finger at the space vacated by Sister Iolanthe.
Here,
he said. Tetrarch Felix glanced at Gilliman. They shared a look. Felix nodded the slightest amount. Matthew had no idea what passed between them. Had they condemned him earlier, in private? Was he to be executed? He steeled himself against the possibility. There was no greater death than that in service. He would be brave.
Tetrarch, ensure I am not disturbed, said Gilliman, and that this chamber is shielded against all forms of surveillance. Shut off the vox and pictors. This conversation will go no further. Colquhoun, you are to remain as sole witness. You will write a sworn account of what is said, which shall be duplicated, sealed, and deposited with the Inquisition on Terra, the High Lords, and my own archive, in the event that the Adeptus Ministerium decides to elaborate upon this event for their own purposes. My lord, said Colquhoun.
Felix left. The doors hissed closed. Gilliman waited for a signal from Felix. When a chime notified all present that privacy protocols were in place, he looked again upon his priest. Matthew flinched at the force of his animosity.
What have you got to say for yourself, militant apostolic?
Sister Iolanthe acted under her own recognizance, my lord. The true servants of the Emperor recognized the girl for what she was and rushed to aid you.
Gilliman took a step forward. He loomed over the priest.
You will not ever lie to me again, militant apostolic, he said plainly. You are lying to me now. You even convinced Sister Iolanthe to lie under oath. By the throne, man, what deviousness is present in you?
My lord, if I may...
You may not!
Gilliman's shout was sudden and terrifying.
This was your doing, he said calmly again.
A good man lies dead. My warriors turn upon one another. A champion of the Emperor is grievously wounded. Another is executed. And all this for no other reason than your arrogance. You believe yourself to be better informed than I. I want you to understand now that is not the case.
I swear Iolanthe did not act upon my orders, said Matthew.
Gilliman growled deep in his throat, an inhuman sound that should never have emanated from so perfect a being. It struck fear into Matthew that he could not hide. Gilliman snorted in contempt.
You disobey my orders again. You lie. Confess, you were responsible.
My Lord Regent,
Matthew began. He looked into Gilliman's eyes and saw the fury that would consume him if he dared deny again.
You saw what happened, he said instead.
Confess, preacher, said Gilliman.
The heat of anger coming off him beat at Matthew.
Tell me that you did it. I want to hear you say it.
Matthew took a step backwards.
Did you not see? Your father was on the field with us, working through the child, said Matthew. She was a vessel for your father's power, chosen by him. His will worked through her.
He retreated further as Gilliman advanced on him.
She threw back the demons. No child could have done that. A golden light issued from her. The Emperor was there. He was with us, all around us. He helped you win. The Emperor is with you,
gabbled Matthew.
Was he now? Said Gilliman. I saw unbounded psychic ability let loose. It could have come from any source, not least the gods who are rival to my brother's patron.
Gilliman leaned forward. A vein pulsed in his broad forehead.
You speak, you priests, as if you know my so-called father, as if you are privy to his will and his word, as if he would speak through you.
His fist clenched. Out of his armor, he seemed more dangerous.
You have never spoken with him. Not one of you damnable fanatics has ever exchanged so much as a word with the Emperor. I lived with him. I fought at his side for centuries. I studied with him. I learned of his dreams for mankind from his own lips, and I raised my sword and spilled my blood to make them a reality.
But there are visions.
There are lies, shouted Gilliman. I am the only living being to have spoken with the Emperor for 10,000 years. 10,000 years, Matthew. And yet you dare to suppose you know his mind. You priests burn, maim, and condemn on the basis of supposition. You practice your barbaric religion in the name of a man who despised and wanted to overthrow all of these things. The Emperor's purpose was to lead us out of the darkness. You, Frita Matthew, you and your kind are the darkness.
He turned his head aside in disgust.
These feats of faith can be explained by the workings of the Empyrean. No god need be invoked, and if one is, it is rarely the thing that is called upon. There are beings in the warp that hearken to such entreaties. I assure you, they are not gods, and the Emperor is not one of them. None of what you believe in can be trusted. None of it!
His voice rose to a condemning shout that echoed off the marble walls. Colquhoun looked shocked. Matthew was battered to his knees. He bowed his head and cowered. Gilliman reined his anger in. His voice fell to a harsh whisper.
You cannot be trusted.
He swallowed and continued in more measured tones.
The man that created me did his job well. The battle would have been won without any intervention from the powers of the warp. That girl was a psyker of rare ability, nothing more, whose presence on the field could have done a great deal of harm. By ordering Iolanthe...
But, my lord, I ordered nothing.
Do not interrupt me,
Gilliman said. He held up his hands as if he were going to grab Matthew by his homespun robes and haul him up into the air and crush his skull. But his fingers stopped short of the priest, where they trembled with rage.
By ordering Iolanth, Gilliman repeated, to bring her to the battle, you risk the annihilation of all our forces. If she had not mastered her ability, if she had become a conduit into the warp...
Gilliman bared his teeth. Matthew had never suspected the Primarch might harbour such depths of rage. Gilliman had always been described as such a bland fellow, a competent genius untroubled by the miseries of unbounded humours. In the scriptures, it was his brothers, and mostly the traitorous fiends at that, who had exhibited the unsaintly traits of anger. But the Primarch was angry, and it was a primordial rage born in the hearts of tortured planets and fast-burning stars. In the brunt of his fury was the anger of the God Emperor himself. Matthew quailed, and yet he felt the beginnings of religious ecstasy creep into his gut. The thought of being destroyed by Gilliman, of falling to the Emperor's only living son, almost undid him. Gilliman recoiled from the adoration shining from Matthew's eyes.
You disgust me. I will not kill you. I cannot. I miscalculated, choosing you. I should have appointed another parasite to your position, like Gisan and the rest. Instead, I thought it best to have an inspiring man by my side to make a virtue of your religion. And this is the repayment I get for giving weight to your faith. You could have killed us all. Chaos has tried to trick me several times. Me! Do you think you are below its attentions? It will use anything to see our species fall. Be sure that your faith does not give it an open gate into your heart.
You saw, my lord. You saw your father's light.
He is not my father.
Gilliman said.
He created me, but I assure you, priest, that he was no father. King Connor was my father.
Matthew blinked at him.
My lord, please.
Listen to me. You live by my indulgence alone. You may have manipulated Tetrarch Felix. You may even have hoodwinked me. Enjoy your success. It shall never happen again.
Gilliman extended his fist. Again, Matthew thought the Primarch meant to strangle him, but he pointed a single accusing finger.
Disobey me again, Matthew. Either the letter of my orders, or the spirit of my leadership, or if you so much as varnish a single one of my words... then I shall commit you to the cleansing flames your cult is so fond of, no matter what ramifications such an action might have. You might seek to gather more power to your religion by winning me over. I say it shall never, ever happen. I will never give myself over to worship of the Emperor. I will not put myself in thrall to you and all the other priests. I tolerate the Adeptus Ministerium as a necessary evil. Do not force me to re-evaluate my position.
Matthew abased himself on the floor.
I seek only to serve you, my lord.
We are done here.
The Primarch's rage turned off. The heat left the room. He seemed smaller again.
Watch your step, priest, said Colquhoun. The Lord Gilliman might not move against you, but there is nothing stopping me.
Colquhoun, said Gilliman, enough.
Colquhoun pointed at Matthew.
I am watching you.
Colquhoun!
Gilliman went to the door.
God, I am finished.
His voice was hoarse with rage. The doors opened. Matthew got up off the floor and called after him.
One day, Matthew said, one day you will see, my lord, you will see the truth. That day will be a glorious day, a thankful day. I shall not relent in my attempts to save you. I cannot. It is your father's purpose for me.
Captain Sicarius stood to attention and saluted as Gilliman walked out. Then he and his Victrix guard fell into line behind Colquhoun. The balance of Primaris Marines to Space Marines had shifted in the guard. Those that had fallen in battle had been replaced by the newer breed.
You will see, Matthew called.
The doors slid closed, leaving him alone.
The Emperor watches us all, he said.
He clasped his hands and closed his eyes in prayer.
Glory, glory, he whispered. Gilliman sees. He begins to see. Glory, glory.
Night and day aboard a vessel are arbitrary things. Turn down the lights and, lo, it is night. Flick a switch again, and so it is day. Power like that was once the province of gods. Rabute Gilliman sat alone in a night of his choosing. The scriptorium was empty. The ship's life went on beyond the sealed doors. But within, in the silence, Gilliman could fool himself that he was alone in the small hours, and the stars outside shone for him alone. He was at his desk. Nothing much had seemed to change since the last time he had had a few minutes to sit and think. Data Screed continued its endless scrolling down his displays, but where usually he would take it in as he worked and act upon the most urgent items in the middle of whatever else he was doing, this time the Primarch spared none of his mind for it. Lines of data were born into green text, pushed down the display, and died in the dark of the screen's bottom without him seeing them. Gilliman's every thought was directed towards the stasis unit given to him by Yasili Suleimania, and the book that it contained. For now, the container was closed, nothing more sinister than a wooden box decorated by a plain pattern on the lid. But it dominated his desk. He was reminded of the box of woes from an ancient legend no one in the current age remembered. He debated opening it and reading the book inside.
There will be no hope beneath it, he warned himself.
Gilliman had never read the book in the box. He had refused at the time it was published. Having never made the same decision about any other book, he had made a public point of ignoring this one. Back in the Age of Enlightenment, Gilliman had always thought of himself as one of the more reasoned of the Primarchs. He had been a man of learning. Rationality was his first and last resort. And yet he had ostentatiously condemned this work. Why? He had done so to please the Emperor, as he did everything back then. But that was not the only reason. He should have made his own mind up. He should have read the arguments and addressed them, not dismissed them. The creed of the imperial truth he stuck to so hard was just that, a creed. It was flawed, and in large part based on a lie. His refusal was a calculated insult. Lorgar and he had never seen eye to eye. Gilliman was a rationalist. Lorgar was a quester after metaphysical truths. Faith was his mode of thought, and Gilliman had disdained it. The word-bearer's way of war had annoyed him. How petty of him. He knew by spurning his brother's beliefs so bluntly he had hastened the end of everything the Emperor believed in. Professed to believe in, Gilliman corrected himself. He had never had chance to speak with the Emperor about the truth. The war prevented it, and when it was over, the Emperor was gone beyond communication. Only that one time upon his return to Terra had Gilliman been in his presence and received something more from his creator other than silence. He thought back on the meeting, as he often did, still unable to reconcile what he thought he had seen with what should have been possible. Maybe, he thought, I did not read it because I was afraid that Lorgar was right. How can I know without reading it? He did not care that he had wronged Lorgar, but that he had abandoned his own intellectual rigour. He had been a fanatic as much as Lorgar was, after his own fashion.
Theoretical. I must set this right. Practical. I must read it.
Gilliman flipped open the lid of the box. The book was slender and rested inside a shallow compartment bathed in the still light of the stasis field. It was so old, almost as old as him. Together, They were relics of another age, time-lost things. In appearance, the book had nothing that suggested the power it possessed. But it was powerful, and so disruptive that Gilliman himself had banned it after Horace's betrayal. Every copy that could be found was burned, its words deemed tainted with a traitor's lies. It was expunged from history, scraped out of the record. People had died to protect it. The faithful called them martyrs, but the imperial cult had been small and ridiculous, and he had ignored it. By then, the damage had been done. The thoughts were out. A memetic virus spread from mind to mind. It had no cure. The writings in this book, the thoughts and beliefs of an arch-traitor, were the foundation of the imperial cult. He speculated if the high priests of the ecclesiarchy were aware of this fact. Often the book was poorly printed, dashed out of underground presses in furtive acts of samizdat. This one was finely made, the property of a rich man or woman. That could have explained why it had survived. The lonely title was emblazoned on the cover in flaking golden leaf, stamped into light brown leather. There was no author's credit. The skin oils of its owner stained the lower right-hand corner of the cover. The sole trace of a person 10 millennia dead. The book had been read many times. Gilliman wondered what manner of person they had been. Imagining was a fruitless exercise that yielded an infinity of theoreticals with no resultant practicals. A waste of time. He cut dead the trains of thought. Imperial Gothic had evolved since the book was written. Even the highest, most ossified form had been dragged out of shape by the tides of change. The script on the book was of the oldest kind. Reading it brought a sudden flush of memories to the Primarch. They intensified Gilliman's feelings of displacement, and he almost abandoned the idea in favour of destroying the book and its box. He did not. His finger depressed the hidden stud, shutting off the stasis field. He stared at the book some more. He picked it up. The leather was dry and flaking. The paper smelled as old paper does, a fusty sharpness, the smell of hidden wisdom and dying memories. 10,000 years after Lorgar Aurelian set pen to paper to create this tract, Gilliman began to read it. "Rejoice, for I bring you glorious news. God walks among us." So ran the first two lines of the Lectitio Divinitatis. That was Dark Imperium, Plague War by Guy Haley, read by John Banks. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019. Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.